Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway. We have a publisher. We have an editor. We have a professor.
Where?
Here, ladies and gentlemen.
We have a retired publisher.
Well, that's true. You don't look so tired.
No, but you know, you introduced me as longtime publisher.
Longtime publisher.
And I've had people say, are you still working? I said, no.
So what's your name?
Ira Fusco, retired publisher.
Of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York. Dr. Alan Chartok, professor emeritus. Then we have to give everybody their proper titles of the State University of New York system. He is the CEO of Northeast Public Radio still, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. I'm not emeritus of anything. You know, that means with merit, emeritus.
Does it? Weren't you emeritus at the Troy Record where you once were the editor?
I was not left with merit. I was told that when I announced that I was leaving, they said, okay, you have to be out of the building right now.
Right. To be emeritus, you have to be an old guy. You're not quite an old guy yet.
That's very kind of you. It also
you're getting there.
Suggests that your skills of observation are not very strong.
I should actually, sorry to blow my own horn, but I should probably be emeritus at two places.
Really?
SUNY at Albany, where I went. Then I was joint professor at SUNY at Albany and SUNY at New Paltz. But I finally retired from SUNY at Albany, and you can't be emeritus in the state university system, and I was in New Paltz for 40 years, unless you actually quit from there.
I see.
Do you think that's appropriate? Because I don't.
Well, you know, I found it. I don't
think
know.
The audience is rising up in opposition to it. I hear how many people are thrilled.
And I'm not sure about your experience, Alan, but I've found, as we used to say in the Bronx, that being emeritus, that and 25 cents will get me on the subway. So,
absolutely right. Absolutely right, Ira, as always.
Right. Absolutely. So anyway, we get underway with a half hour of conversation, or less than that now, since we've been babbling away, of commentary, analysis, and maybe even a little bit of insight into the media issues of the week. Last week on this program, we were talking a lot about the last debate, the CNBC debate that brought all sorts of criticism from the Republican candidates and from some journalists, too, because some of the questions were rather silly. But what seems to be the case is that the effort by the candidates to try to institute takeover of how the debates are run begins to crumble because individual campaigns are not signing on to a letter of demands to the media. So it all goes to show that I think that a lot of the debate about the debates just simply has to do with who's going to get a leg up. It doesn't have to do with fairness at all. It is about which candidate is going to be able to get their voice heard.
Well, you know, Rex, as always, you make profound comments and insights into the way all of this works. However, I do think they found the Republicans found them candidates found themselves in a difficult position. Number one, they didn't like the questions. So the American people were scratching their heads and cartoons were appearing saying, so you don't like the questions from the press, from the free press. You can imagine what you're going to do when you're confronted with Putin. You know, number one. But then remember what they're doing up there. They're trying to kill each other.
Uh-huh.
So how do you all get on board and sign a letter when, in fact, what you want is a gotcha to one of your colleagues who knocks him out of the race?
Well, and one of the requirements, one of the requests was that was on this draft was that moderators include non-journalists. Now, there's a swell idea. Why don't we have somebody who actually works in politics asking questions, right?
Well, let me ask you a question about that. And Alan may need to correct my premise, but if these debates, Democrat having their debate to choose a candidate, Republicans the same, if the primary reason for the Republican debate is to determine which of the people on those podiums is best able to represent the Republicans in the general election, shouldn't the questions come from people who are, in fact, Republicans or conservatives, because they are more likely to ask questions that will be pertinent to them and thus presumably to the Republican base or the Republicans in general? Why are Democrats or people who are even right up the middle asking those questions? I'm not necessarily advocating it, but it's something I've been thinking about.
Well, and you should, as always. But let me just say, Ira, that has been done in the past. They have had people at some debates, as I remember it, standing up before a microphone and asking a question. So it's not as if this is an entirely new concept. But I think that, you know, the people like Rex and our friend Rosemary and you, who are also, you know, pompous about the rights of journalists, take some exception to the idea that we common people should be allowed to ask questions.
Oh, I'm not suggesting that. I want to
suggest that you're a common person.
I want to know.
You're too modest.
I want to know why shouldn't the debate panel of journalists? There are any number of conservative Republican journalists or commentators. Why don't we have George Will and Sean Hannity and Hugh Hewitt? He named three out of the air. Why don't they make up the panel? Because won't they ask the questions that are of most interest to the people who are going to be voting in the primary?
Commentators instead of people with any independence, in other words. Because otherwise, if you're going to take straight journalists, you're going to have to do a litmus test. You're going to say, well, how conservative are you? I mean, I think that's the problem. If you get a Ted Cruz, he would not accept the premise that people whom you might determine to be conservative are in fact conservative.
And you could just see the fighting that will go, the infighting that will go on among them about, you know, Cruz once had a good article written about him by so-and-so, and I want him on the panel. No, I don't want him on the panel. He's a lackey for you. You can just see how dangerous this kind of thing can go.
Well, therein lies the rub. If they're not even going to be able to agree on conservative commentators, how could they agree on neutral or left-wing commentators?
Well, they shouldn't have to agree upon it, actually. It's not up to them. I think that it's up to the media outlets to say, we're going to do a debate, and here are the people who are going to moderate it, and if you guys want to be a part of it, you can, or you don't have to. And the GOP candidates started to get together to place their demands, and then pretty soon,
Oslo Accords.
Yeah, you know, Chris Christie's people say, no, I don't think so. No, John Kasich's people say, I'm not going to sign. But I think that the media have the responsibility to try to give the American voters insight into these issues, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I do. And you don't want to take the function away from the media. But one of the things I find interesting about this, Rex, is that these debates incredibly have attracted huge audiences. And if it becomes too insular, and two, okay, we're going to ask each other questions that only we will like, because some of these debates, they let them ask questions to each other, only questions that we will like, then it will certainly drive away a lot of that audience.
But that audience has not been huge until this year, and Trump would suggest, more than suggest, Trump boasts that the reason the audiences are large is because of him.
By the way, I agree with him.
So what do we make of that other than is it just an aberration? In other words, let's say President Trump serves his two terms, and 8 years from now, the debates might be back to 2 million because there won't be a Trump in the debate field.
Sure. Then you've got, you know, one of the Kardashians running for president. Why not? Reality TV stars as president.
Well, Kim Kardashian could carry the country on her back.
Ira, that's terrible.
Dear. The Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Offer your thoughts at media@wamc.org. That's our email address, and we're happy to take your thoughts about this. Actually, we had a letter from someone raising a question about whether it was appropriate for the websites of newspapers to accept political advertising. The campaign season for local races has just ended. And so the question is, when you see an ad for a candidate on a media website, is that a problem? Is there something wrong about that? On the front page of a newspaper website, is it wrong to have political advertising? Ira, you
We struggled with this when I was still working, and the bigger question we had was, once we began print advertising on the front page of the print edition, should we run political ads there? And it's my recollection that we decided, no, we were not going to run print ads. But on the website, we felt it was different and that it was easier to determine what was an ad and what wasn't.
No, I'm not implying you're a dinosaur in any way.
I believe I could qualify.
But I do want you to know that everything has changed. And as you know, both of you have to go to the, quote, budget committee, which I've always thought of, I've never been there, but I always thought of as sort of the star chamber, and go up there with your knees shaking and say, you know, can, what's your money? All of a sudden, anything, it looks good in terms of a cash return.
It can, though, you know, there are still certain things that we absolutely will not do. I mean, you can't.
And we won't do.
Right, of course. Yeah. You know, you can buy an ad on the front page of the newspaper now. And we used to say that will never happen. Mm. Of course, in the early days of newspapers, the first edition of the what became the Times Union, the Albany Morning Times in 1856, the whole front page was advertising. It was lots of these little tiny one-inch ads. And so there was a lot of advertising on the front page until the last 50 years, and then it went off, and now it's back again on the front page of newspapers. So
the New York Times had ads forever, those and the little footers on the bottom of the page. And you're right, our tolerance for not accepting ads has changed, I'm sure, quite a bit. But in this particular election cycle, I don't remember seeing any print ads on a front page of my paper, but then I didn't see a lot of any kind of political ads in our paper, which is another trend that's happened over the years, that the politicians don't believe the print advertising is effective, and or that they don't believe there's a need to put print ads in newspapers because newspaper readers tend to be more intelligent and then will be reading the stories about those politicians. Mm. Thus, they don't need the advertisements
in
the paper.
I'm sorry to interrupt there, Ira, but you know, or to divert the conversation, but I've been getting a lot of mail here at public radio at this station because NPR, the network, which we theoretically but less and less control, has been taking ads from the basically pro-fracking people.
Ads, you ads. Mean? You don't mean ads.
No,
you're
I mean underwriting
support. Yeah.
Thank you for that, Rex, of taking underwriting.
Because I know you wouldn't wish to stoop to refer to it as advertising, though it is exactly that.
When
it's just understated advertising. Oh, I beg your pardon.
When you're my height, you don't do much stooping.
I didn't mean to say that, of course. I didn't mean any offense.
Okay, yes, you did. So, and then they write to us and say, how come they do it? I said, well, we wouldn't take it, but they're taking it. And then they really get very hostile. They say, well, you really ought to get very angry at them and run a campaign.
Now, let me understand this. Why would you determine that you wouldn't accept underwriting from people who have a point of view that contradicts your personal point of view, Alan?
Well, it's not my personal point of view.
Oh, it's not. Oh, no. Okay. Is it the station's point of view?
No.
On what basis, then, would you turn down underwriting from that?
Because it's too, quote, political. That's
why. Too political. So what is not political?
Well, there is something. Well, look, you're talking to a guy who teaches this to students and knows that everything is political one way or the other. Mm. So please don't look down your nose too far.
I was really getting fired up there.
However, St. Louis, a number of years ago, was approached by the Ku Klux Klan.
The Saint was?
St. Louis?
St. Louis
radio station.
Many years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
The radio station.
Yes, I was thinking of the Saint himself.
I see. That's what my mother used to say. I see.
That was your brother, St. Louis, right? your twin brother, Louis Chartres. St. Louis and the devil, Alan. Anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. I was taking your distraction.
And St. Louis, the radio station, said, we're not taking the ad for the Ku Klux Klan. And the response was, you have to. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, who said they could do anything they want.
Mm-hmm.
The station.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So you can do anything you want. And what you're saying is that you find fracking to be such a despicable idea that you don't think that the underwriting should be allowed on a public radio station where probably some of your listeners think fracking is okay.
No. That is
there
not
may
what
be
I'm
some.
Saying. You know what I love about you, Rex? You
I'm
have
just
the,
trying to
you have
help
the ability
clarify.
To put words in somebody's mouth. Not at all. Everything is decided on a case-by-case basis. But some things you want to say are too controversial. And if there's money available for it, unlike the kind of things we've been talking about with newspapers, including yours, about take the money, we don't always take the money. We try to have a balanced approach. And by the way, we have underwriting, you know, we have commentary, pro-fracking, anti-fracking on the air all the time.
And so you wouldn't take any underwriting from groups that are opposed to fracking either?
Probably not.
Probably not. But definitely not people who are in favor of it.
No, the answer is not, but we haven't been approached.
Aha.
Nor have we been approached by the other guys.
Well, there should be a challenge. Let's see if somebody offers you $50,000 of underwriting support and comes from one side or the other of that, because, you know, that would be interesting.
Or either we'll take it or I'll quit.
Well, but just to be clear, I hate to take Alan off the hook, but we do in print have the same leverage. The publisher always has the ability to reject an ad, and occasionally mm-hmm. that will happen. I'm sure I've done that. I can't remember why, but maybe because the content seemed offensive or language or something like that. I can't recall us turning down an ad because of a point of view, however, as long as it was labeled as such.
Hmm.
I tried to be a stickler to make sure that every ad that had a point of view either said political ad, which was more clear, or paid advertisement so that there'd be no confusion.
Yeah, actually, we get very annoyed about that. We have, I think I've mentioned this in the program before, there are certain type fonts that we reserve for editorial content, and those are not allowed in advertising.
That's right.
And everything that is advertising needs to be labeled as such. But occasionally, some of our ad sales reps apparently try to push the envelope, as the saying goes, and they'll use a font that's very close to ours, and they'll somehow accidentally leave off the little line that says paid advertisement because this is in the interest of advertisers to try to make something look like it's genuine news content.
You know, that's a profound point, really. As much as I hate to agree with you about anything, Rex, that's a profound point because we have people who sell the underwriting on WAMC, and it is in their interest to sell it. And when somebody pushes them, they're likely to sort of push us for expanding the number of words or, you know, what can be said. And we lawyer every single ad. In other words, if we think that there is something that is not right about it in terms of the rules on underwriting, we're going to send it to the lawyer and find out if it's okay. But we quite frequently get pushed by our underwriting people.
Well, here's one. Speaking of being pushed by the people who are trying to raise revenue, thank goodness for them, by the way. You know, I'm really grateful that there's some revenue coming in to support the journalism that we do. But, you know, we publish magazines at the Times Union. We have a monthly magazine called 518 Life, named after the area code for this area. And we have a six times a year magazine called Women at Work for professional women in the capital region, which is also a network of women who have, you know, it's the fastest growing women's organization actually in the region.
Actually, both very good magazines.
Oh, good. Thank you. I'll pass that along to the editors. And the
I just wanted to show that I'm nice even if you're not.
Just as sweet as a puppy. And some of the sales reps would love to sell the cover. That is, not just put an ad on the cover,
right,
but they would like to be able to say, okay, if you're an advertiser, what you can do is you can buy the right to put your merchandise on the cover of this magazine.
So give us a for example.
Well, for example, if we're doing a feature, let's see, on a particular clothing, a feature on a woman, it would be an advertiser could buy the right to have their clothing on the front page.
Oh, what we used to call in the movies product placement.
A product placement, absolutely, yes. And we're not so keen on that kind of thing. We think that's not a good idea because if there's, even in the magazine world, I think there's a certain level of integrity expected that if we're putting content onto a page, it has to be a reflection of the real value of the content, the newsworthiness.
I don't know, Rex. The Shartox, under the direction of my wife, the lovely Roselle, gets the Financial Times every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a paper that she dearly loves and I read every once in a while. But they always have a magazine sort of supplement, which is How to Spend It.
Aha. Yes.
How to spend it. And while I don't know whether they do product placement on the front, my bet is that they do.
Interesting.
By the way, I can't recall if it was on this program last week or on one of the roundtable programs, but you were having a discussion about your name and a comment that you had made being used in an advertisement for a politician.
Oh, yes, I heard that.
Yeah, and oh, so it wasn't on this program. Maybe it was on the roundtable.
Yeah.
And I was talking back to the radio saying, the panel was disturbed by it, if you made that comment over the air or in print, they don't need to ask your permission to use it in the ad. In fact, they could take it out of context.
By the way, they did exactly that, and I knew that. And they made it quite clear that this was not an endorsement. I had said something very good about the politician years ago or a while back. And I got a couple of letters or emails from people saying they're sending out this mailing with your nice comments about them 3 days or 4 days before the election. And I wanted to make it clear that this was not an endorsement.
But you made the comments on the air.
Yeah.
They weren't on the air. They were in columns.
Right to use I think we're talking about the ethical right.
The variance to that is in an ad, and I think you folks made reference to it. If you have an ad where that has 500 signatures in support or in opposition to a program or a subject, each of those people is supposed to sign a release, or there should be a blanket release from the advertiser saying we've gotten releases from everybody. But, you know, we'll see. You'll see in movie advertisements, Alan Chartuk says this movie was colossal. And the full sentence might have been, boy, this movie is a colossal disaster. But, but you'll see that all the time in movies.
No. But what happened was that the day after I talked about this, now we're getting very close to the election, the politician himself emailed me and said, hey, you should have, this is great, you should have called me before you said that.
Had he not called you for putting
his name? And he had not called you to use your name. Right.
Did the politician win his race?
No, he lost.
He lost.
We tell people that we don't have the right to stop people from quoting the Times Union, of course, because it's published, but we do hold the copyright on our logo, of course.
That's interesting.
And so sometimes people will use the Times Union logo on their campaign literature, and we tell them cease.
Oh, is that right? Even if you've endorsed the candidate?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. We don't want anybody to be using our logo, and we would prefer that people not use our material in their campaign literature at all, one way or another. But,
sure.
We'll see. If somebody is endorsed by another newspaper and prints that endorsement in its entirety
in their newspaper.
In my newspaper, yeah.
To kind of counter your endorsement.
No. Well, sometimes our paper doesn't endorse anybody anymore, but it's just to disseminate to a different audience what another newspaper says.
Well, Ira, you really know about Hollywood and all that stuff.
Yes.
And one of the things I'm fascinated by is when, you know, you got a dog of a movie, and then you see these endorsements by reviews, and a line from a review by somebody you never heard
of.
Well,
that's right. If you read these reviews carefully, if you look and see where the publication is, they're often very tiny or almost non-existent publications who may or may not be on the payroll.
Or you can pick up a particular adjective that is, a movie was stunning in its ignorance, and it just the ad just says stunning, the LA Times. And I sometimes think that critics write in a way that they will get their little phrases picked up.
I absolutely believe that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure.
Even if they're writing a negative review.
It's great publicity for them.
Absolutely. Get their name out there on the billboards. So before we leave this week's show, we need to make note of a media event of some significance in the immediate community where this program originates. We're coming to you from Central Avenue in Albany, New York. Those of you in Waxahachie, Texas, and Evansville, Indiana, and everywhere that you're hearing this program, there's an alternative weekly that has missed its first publication date in, I think, 38 years.
When you say alternative, you sort of mean lefty, right?
Well, Metroland, alt-weekly is a term that, to the extent that it still has a political conscience. But that existed. The alternative press has been declining for years, you know. I remember when the Village Voice used to be such a powerful organ, and you paid $1 for it each week. Now it became free, and now it is much diminished. And that seems to have happened here locally. But it's a sad passing, you know. I mean, I think the alternative universe had its place. And now with the rise of the digital, there are so many more venues for those voices to be heard that there was just less value. And also a lot of the advertisers that support those, frankly, that supported those publications don't pay their bills. And so it's very hard to support those kinds of publications.
It's a sad thing. You're so right, Rex.
Yeah. But it's in the context of the print world having difficulties all over the place. The LA Times is doing another buyout. 15% of the newsroom says, give me a buyout, please. The Philadelphia newspapers, the Inquirer, the Daily News, and Philly.com are all merging into a single newsroom, and they're going to have newsroom layoffs of significance. So, you know, it's a tough time for print all the way around.
It is.
Metroland is an interesting publication. As somebody who does not live in the immediate capital region, I would pick it up when I'm up here, and I always found it to be interesting, but in light of its current financial problems, it was pretty clear over the last few years that each week you'd pick it up and it was thinner than it had been before. I mean, it used to be a pretty robust publication, and it had a lot of advertising in it, and the fact that they were not meeting their bills might suggest that the advertisers were not always paying, or they were charging little or nothing for the ads.
But, and they've got columnists, and they've got people who review movies for them, and they've been doing that for years, and these people are now, even if they were doing it for free, out of work.
Yeah, and that is a sad thing. And I'm always sad to see a voice stilled in the community.
Yeah.
So, and one year they voted us the best media-related program, so I always had an affinity for them.
The best local media-related program. Name another one.
Well, I didn't ask
that
question.
Well, there is that thing from New York City called On the Media.
Oh, that.
We play that.
That's a good thing. Yeah. Anyway, that's all we have time for from this formerly...
This program notwithstanding.
This program, the formerly best media program. Thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
Named Prince.
It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.